Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sports Unlimited on Southern Sports Central, and it starts right now.
Everyone, and welcome to Sports Unlimited right here on Southern Sports Central. My name is Brandon Biscobing, and hey, guess what? Are you ready for some football? That's right. It's week zero. It's football season. Great to have some football back. Will be a fun day. I've got the full preview for you guys this morning. Full preview for 5A, which, like we mentioned, if you guys have been listening for the last couple of weeks, been running through each classification. This week finishes it off with 5A as we get ready for the first week of the season here in South Carolina. And then, hey, next week we got college football. In a couple of weeks we got the NFL. We're back to the full swing of things, and we're back to football season throughout the country. And it, first off, before I start this morning, I just want to say it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy to think that, you know, it's been a year. Now, not quite a year. It's been a little less than a year, but because last year it started late last season due to COVID and everything. Which, unfortunately, we have to talk about again. It's been a crazy week when it comes to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. But it's crazy to think that it's been a little less than a year since football season was here last. This year really flew by. And, hey, you know, in just a few months we'll be back to Thanksgiving and Christmas and all of that good stuff. It's crazy. But before we get to talking about week zero, talking about the regular season, talking about 5A, all of that good stuff, just a couple of national notes that I wanted to run through this morning for the first half hour. We'll run through those national notes, talk a little national sports news for the first half hour, and then we'll dive right into it at the bottom of the hour with, you know, a 5A preview, week zero preview, all that good stuff. Got a great list of guests coming on this morning, going around the state. We'll start down in the low country this morning with David Shelton from the Post and Courier. We'll go out to the Midlands at 8:30 with Lou Bejak from the state. And then at 9, we'll finish it off with the Grand Strand Report right up here on the Grand Strand. Ian Guerin from Maiori News coming on. Talk to him about some things. Lots of craziness. This is, you know, and what's crazy is that last year, even last year with the 7-game schedule and all of that and the concerns about everything and, you know, and I mean, don't get me wrong. Last year there were a lot of cancellations in the first week as a result of COVID. But I don't think it was this bad. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. And if I am, be sure to call in. I've got the phone lines wide open this morning. Definitely want to hear from you guys. 323-784-9681 is that number to call. That number again, 323-784-9681. Definitely want to hear from everyone. Get your thoughts on the season. Get your predictions. If you have any questions for me on certain teams, how I think certain teams will do, all of that good stuff, be sure to call on in. 323-784-9681. But like I said, you know, I don't think, maybe I'm wrong. But at least it seems to me as though this year, to start off at least, has been even crazier than last year was in terms of the cancellations and all of that. But like I said, got a couple of national notes to talk about first this morning before we jump into the high school football preview and all of that good stuff. First, some MLB, a quick MLB note. Well, a couple of MLB notes, actually. First, the Cubs and Reds have been announced that they will play the 2022 Field of Dreams game. I mean, these two teams, don't get me wrong, these two teams are certainly teams that it makes sense to have them there and all of that with how Field of Dreams was. Would have kind of preferred Cubs and White Sox just because, you know, the White Sox are the main focus. I know that they're trying to mix it up. Franchises. So it makes sense. I'm hoping we get old jerseys. And just for not only the history portion of it, but also there is a movie reference within this as well. But personally, I would have preferred either Cubs and Red Sox because, you know, remember, the Red Sox are, I forget what his name was in the movie, but Kevin Costner's character, the main character, was originally from Boston, and one of the opening shots is him at Fenway. Or I would have liked to see Red Sox and White Sox. That would have been a fun matchup to see, to continue the movie tradition. You know, White Sox and Yankees were the teams that played, you know, if I remember correctly. I've seen the movie, but I haven't seen it in a long, long time. So I think it was I know it was the, you know, the Eight Men Out. It was the band players who were playing initially, but I think there was another team or another group of ghosts that came out, and I think they were Yankees if I remember correctly. I could be wrong, but that would make sense for that, and you know. Would love to see that tradition continue. I love the fact that they're doing it again. But like I said last week, I hope that they don't overdo it, because there is that potential, like what's happened with the Winter Classic and now the Stadium Series, where they see dollar signs and they say, I've said it countless times. I'm not sure if I've ever said it on this program, but just in general all the time. When it comes to any sort of entertainment product, there comes that apex where you do something right and you build up its popularity and everything, but then the company inevitably sees dollar signs and either tries to push it too far or tries to bring in a foreign audience, and then it just tanks. And sometimes they're able to fix their mistake and reverse course, and sometimes they're not. I've seen it countless times and on countless different entertainment products. So as long as they do it right, I'm happy that they're bringing back the Field of Dreams game again next season. But, you know, and I would, like I said last week, I would love for them to do some other things. I would love to see them do other venues, figure out some other venues, other classic venues to do it in, or unique venues. The other MLB note that I saw yesterday, it was either yesterday or the day before yesterday, Shohei Ohtani now is up to 40 home runs this season. And he is the only player in MLB history to be a consistent pitcher and hit 40 home runs. Not even Babe Ruth, at least while he was pitching. I forget the exact stat. It was like, most home runs with, I think X amount of starts. In years that Babe Ruth started consistently, and I'm actually surprised. I actually learned something that I didn't know, that he did pitch fairly, not all the time. Obviously, not in his crazy year, not in his 60 home run year or anything like that. But later on, towards the end of his career, he did go back to pitching for a while, as well as hitting. Crazy, not even Babe Ruth did. The highest he ever got in a year that he pitched consistently was 38. And just about that, Shohei Ohtani is a unique, very special player. And while yes, he is an anomaly, the only one that we've ever really seen do it like this, obviously, the only other one that was on that list, Babe Ruth. So Shohei is in very company, is in a very select club. But this, looking at Shohei, and obviously the Angels are in the AL, so they've made, they've worked around it. But this should be a notice that, hey, maybe we shouldn't get rid of the DH so quickly. Like I've said before, I like the concept of having different rules in the different leagues to make them more unique and to make interleague play more interesting. Because here's the thing. Let me compare it to the NFL real quick to give you an idea. Interconference play in the NFL just feels like any other game. If the Giants are playing the Jets or, playing the, think what's a good team to compare. Let's see. Panthers don't really have any you know, rivals in the area that are, you know, in the AFC. But, okay, let's say the Panthers are playing the Jaguars or something. You know, it doesn't feel unique. It just feels like another game. You know, it's like, okay, you're playing interconference. Who cares? It doesn't change anything. It's just the same old game. Whereas in baseball, you know, when an AL team has to travel to an NL city, those pitchers now have to suit up and bat. So it makes things very much more interesting. And the World Series especially, it makes things very unique. I mean, well, for Braves fans, they would like to forget this. But, you know, for Yankee fans who can forget Pettit in 96, you know, late in the game, in a spot where normally you would see a manager pinch hit to get another hitter up there. But Joe Torre rolled the dice. He said, I want my starter. Maybe Pat gets a base hit and scores and drives in a run. You know, you don't get those moments if you cut out the DH. I'm just saying. Speaking of the Jaguars, transitioning over to the NFL, Jaguars released Tim Tebow. While overall, especially after the block scene around the world, if you guys haven't seen it yet, go check it out. He did his job. Here's the thing. To his credit, he did his job. Was it a very sloppy block? Was it an uncoordinated block? Yeah, it was. But did he block his man and redirect him a bit? Yeah, he did. Did he do better than most of us could do? Probably. But while on one hand I'm a little surprised because it was Urban Meyer and I thought, you know, Urban would. For something, I'm not surprised all that much that the Jaguars released him at the same time, because, you know, and I think at this point, especially because, you know, his old college coach, now granted, he had Trevor Lawrence there, so it's a little different, and the game has changed since 2011 and 2012 and 2013. But with that being said, I'm a little surprised that he got cut, because I would have thought that Urban Meyer, you know, would have tried to, you know, figure out some sort of spot for him. But I think this, unfortunately, and even at this point, even if he had stayed in the game, I think the league would have moved him at this point. But he showed that he could win. And I've said this before. He showed that he could win, and he had that it factor that when, you know, when push came to shove in crunch time, he could win games. And, you know, that should be all that matters. Whether or not you're able to win games. And he was able to do that. You know, was he the most orthodox quarterback? No, not at all. But did he do what he needed to do to win football games? Absolutely. But unfortunately, this is probably the end to the Tebow saga. Not sure where he goes next. Probably back to ESPN and back into the college football booth or the college football table as an analyst. But we'll see. We'll see. Good luck to him, obviously, but, you know, kind of disappointed that, you know, that it didn't happen the way it was. Didn't happen the way it should. It could have. One more note before I take a break on the NFL front, and this was interesting when I saw it. Washington football team have finally, and I'm surprised that they're doing it now. I thought, you know, you should have done this months ago and we should have had a decision for this season. But it looks like this will be, hopefully, the last season that the Washington football team will be known as the Washington football team. They have cut their list of possible team names down to 3 options out of 8 finalists. They did not announce, kind of surprising, they didn't announce who the three true finalists were, but they did announce what the 8 finalists were. Those are Armada, President, Brigade, Red Hogs, Commanders, Red Wolves, Defenders, and Keeping Washington Football Team. Let me go through each name and give you my thoughts on which out of these I think the 3 finalists should be, and then which name that was, you know, not on there should have been put in there. Armada, don't like it all that much. President is an interesting idea, especially considering, you know the other names of the teams in the area. You know, you've got the Nationals and you got the Capitals. And then you have the Wizards, who are just the odd man out. I wouldn't mind Presidents, but I feel like I don't know. Granted, you could essentially keep the same logo that you had as the Redskins and just change it, you know, or not quite the same, but similar, and basically just change it to, you know, George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, essentially. And just have them replace the Redskin head. Brigade, not much of a fan of that one. Red Hogs, I like, because it keeps the red and it keeps the pig mascot that the fans had. Commanders, not a big fan of. Red Wolves, I wouldn't mind. Defenders, I wouldn't mind either. And then obviously Washington football team, if they stick with that, they're just being ridiculous at this point. The one name that I thought would have been the perfect way of amending, you know, making amends to their past and the whole reason why they needed to change their name in the first place would have been Red Tails and paying tribute to the Tuskegee Airmen. And a lot of people said that from the beginning. There was a big call for it, and it would have kept the red. I don't get why they didn't go with that. I mean, I'm not surprised because, you know, this is Dan Snyder we're talking about. But at the same time, I'm disappointed that they didn't. That being said, my top 3, if I were choosing, definitely Red Hogs. That would probably be my top choice, Red Hogs. Red Wolves would be my second. And then a toss-up between either the Presidents or the Defenders. One of those two would be my third option. So, you know, one of those 3 options I'd be okay with. Like I said, Red Hogs, especially out of those options that they gave me, Red Hogs, hands down the best, and if they went and if they chose Red Hogs, I wouldn't mind it. I'd be like, okay. My thought would have been, okay, you know, this keeps the Red, keeps their fans happy, because they're able to keep their, you know, because here's the thing. Here's the difference between the you know, the Redskins, now Washington Football Team, and the Indians, now, well, for now, Guardians. We don't know if that's going to stick. But, and even for, like, the Braves or Florida State, it's a little different. The Redskins never had, like, yeah, I'm sure some people, I mean, I know for a fact, actually, some people did wear the headdress every now and again and whatnot. But that wasn't an iconic look of the Redskins fans. It was more so the pig nose. That was the look of Redskins fans. That was their trademark. So sticking with that would make your fans happy and make it so that a lot of them wouldn't even need to change their gear for game day. So that's the best option, hands down. Now, obviously, for the Indians, it was a little trickier because most of their fan gear and most of their look was based around Chief Wahoo and the headdress and all of that. Braves, same thing. It's going to be hard if they ever decide to change. It's going to be hard for them to get rid of things like the tomahawk chop. Same with Florida State. I mean, I think the Seminoles have a deal with the Seminole Nation where they're protected. Because remember, this whole thing happened a few years back when it came to changing native names in college, and some teams had to change, some teams didn't. But yeah, like I said, Red Hogs hands down is the best option out of those options. If they don't go with that, then they're being very, very stupid. Let's just put it that way. So I'll take a quick break, and then when I come back, we will have a full 5A and Week 0 preview ahead for you. And if you want to get your thoughts in on anything, be sure to call in 323-784-9681. That number again, 323-784-9681. We'll be right back right here on Sports Unlimited on Southern Sports Central.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back, horse stock is attached. Head is matted black, got the bushes black to match. Riding on a horse, ha, you can whip your Porsche. I've been in the valley, you ain't been up off that porch now. Nobody tell me nothing.
Spend a lot of money on my brand new guitar. Baby's got a habit, diamond rings and Fendi sports bras. Riding down Rodeo in my Maserati sports car. God knows stress, I've been through all that. I'm like a Marlboro man, so I keep going back. Wish I could roll on back to that old
Welcome back to Sports Unlimited right here on Southern Sports Central. And like I mentioned, like as promised, got full preview for you guys this morning for week zero. But before we get to that, I hate to have to do this to you guys, but we have to talk about COVID because this has been, like I mentioned at the open this morning, this has been a crazy, crazy week. I'll have to ask both Lou and Ian, and I may even ask Dave and Shelton this, as compared to last year, was this week worse? But let's get right into it. So started off over, well, either, I think it was either Friday or Saturday. Pickens County decided to shut down everything last week. It forced the Pickens versus Liberty game to be canceled. And originally it also had Easley and Wade Hampton canceled as well. But apparently, I guess, they were put in quarantine and they were able to get out of quarantine. They'll get out of quarantine maybe today, I think. And they'll be allowed to, they'll be able to play tonight, or not tonight. They moved that game, the week zero game, up to Monday. So they will be able to play on Monday. And then the fun really began. I mean, there were a few games over the weekend, a few games here and there, but the fun really occurred on Monday, where at least 14 games were canceled, according to Ian Guerin. By his calculation, he came up with 14. I tried to keep up with it as much as I could, but I don't even know if I got all the cancellations and whatnot. So let's run through some of them. Keenan and Timberland was canceled. York and Malden was canceled. Some crazy craziness happened in the Midlands Midlands. And I'll talk about that let's run through some of the other ones first, and then I'll jump back to that. This is something I'm definitely going to have to ask Lou Bezek about when he comes on at 8. Daniel and West Ashley was canceled. Louisville and Lawrence Manning canceled. Columbia versus Chesterfield canceled. Columbia was able to get an opponent for tonight. They will face off against Louisville tonight. James Island versus West Mecklenburg was canceled. Landrum against Buford canceled. Chester against Union County was canceled. Chester did find an opponent. They will play Charlotte Providence tonight. Crestwood versus Lancaster canceled. Walhalla versus Westo canceled. Central versus Buford was added to the schedule. Colleton County versus Wade Hampton was canceled. C.A. Johnson versus Denmark Olar was canceled. C.A. Johnson did pair up with Wade Hampton. They will face off against each other tonight. Military Magnet versus Hanahan was canceled. Cross and Burke was canceled. May River had their game canceled, but they paired up with Orangeburg Wilkinson to play tonight. Branchville and Dorchester Academy was canceled. Fox Creek and Dreer was canceled. Fox Creek had another craziness. I'll talk about the one. This is another one, too, that I'll have to talk to Lou Bezek about, because Fox Creek got East Clarendon on the schedule, but then late last night, it came out that game was canceled, that East Clarendon got put in quarantine. So now the big question I have for Lou is it possible for Fox Creek to potentially get a very, very, very last minute opponent for tonight? Or is it, you know, that they're done? They're completely done for this week. Lamar and Timmonsville was canceled. Johnsonville and Marion was canceled. Carver's Bay and Waccamaw was canceled last week. We already knew about that from Waccamaw being pulled out of the CMB Hickoff Classic. Marion will now play Carver's Bay. That was actually played last night. We'll get you the full recap and score on that in just a little bit. Hartsville and Marlborough County canceled. Latta and Shaw canceled. Latta will now play Marlborough County, so those two teams paired up. Hilton Head and Wilson was canceled. And here in on the Grand Strand, North Merrill Beach versus Conway was canceled as well as a result of quarantine. But that's not the biggest news to come out here out of the Grand Strand this week. But before we get to that, let me go back to talking about that one big crazy mess of a scheduling conflict up in the Midlands. So Irmo versus Chapin was canceled, and Airport versus Swansea was canceled initially. Those were the two initial games. Then Chapin and Keenan paired up, but then Keenan got COVID, and that game was canceled. Airport and Crestwood was originally added, but then Crestwood got put into quarantine. That game got canceled. And now Chapin will face Airport tonight. Third potential matchup of the week. Of the week! This is the world that we're going to live in for the next couple of months. And what's even crazier, if we don't get our act together, we could be right back where we were. And like I said, this is a question I'm going to ask Lou and Ian when they come on, and David. At least to me, feels like this has been even crazier than last year in terms of the sheer amount of cancellations that we got in week zero. Because I know there were some last year. I remember that there were at least a few last year, primarily in the Midlands last season. But I don't remember this many. I don't remember it being this many. And so now it's a matter of, we need to figure out what to do about this. And, you know, well, I'll talk about it in a second, but some regions have decided to be proactive with this. And I'll ask Lou about this as well. On whether some other regions are going to decide to be more proactive about this as well. So like I said, the big news coming out of the Grand Strand this week was that on Monday, on what I've been referring to as Black Monday, with all of those cancellations, at least 14, in one day, Region 6-5A decided to be proactive and voted to play two region matchups, essentially cut out the non-region schedule. Each team will have two spots to fill in non-region games. A lot of them are being played, well, some of them are being played tonight. Actually, I think if I remember correctly, I think only two of them are being played tonight. St. James will play Loras on, I think, tomorrow. Yeah, it's tomorrow. Socastee lost their game. Conway lost their game to North Myrtle. I believe Sumter is playing tonight. And Carolina Forest, weather permitting, will be heading up to North Carolina and playing West Brunswick tonight. I'll have all that action for you live on FHN Sports. Go to fhnsports.com/Carolina if you want to listen to that game tonight. So both, you know, each team will have the chance to play two non-region games, with since there's five teams in the region, so four games, four times two is eight, plus two is ten. But even with that, it still destroyed some very good non-region games, a couple of very good non-region schedules. Before I get to that, the way that this is going to work is whatever the last game between two opponents was the last game played between two opponents, that is the one that will count towards region play. So if you play both of the games against a certain opponent, only the second game will count towards region standings. But if you get, you know, obviously if you get quarantined for the first one and play the second one, then the second one counts. But if you get quarantined, if you play the first one, but then you cannot play the second one, then the first one will be the one that will count towards region standings. Now, I may have to ask Ian about this. I don't even know if he necessarily knows the answer to this. In the very unlikely scenario that neither game is able to be played, I wonder what happens then. That's a question I'll have to ask Ian when he comes on. But like I was saying, this destroys some very good non-region games. Carolina Forest was supposed to play Ridgeview, was supposed to travel to West Florence's brand new stadium, and was going to host Fort Dorchester. And on top of those three games, which we already knew they were going to lose, Myrtle Beach decides to pull out and change their schedule for week one, even though they didn't have to. A lot of speculation on whether Murray mad that Region 6-5A did this so late in the game. Gonna have to ask, that's another question I'm asking in later on, of, you know, if there's bad blood there now, and how this may impact things in the future. But yeah, some pretty crazy, that's another crazy storyline that may come into play, not this year, obviously, now, but next year, you know, and going into realignment and what happens there. Some intriguing things going on now with that. And, you know, even in other sports, you may see it, you know, impact things. Conway lost a few good games. You know, they lost the game at North Myrtle Beach for this week already. But they were supposed to travel to Florence's brand new digs. They were supposed to travel to Myrtle Beach, and they were supposed to travel to Blythewood. Soccer was supposed to play at Myrtle Beach and at Dillon. St. James was going to play at North Myrtle. Sumter lost a bunch of good games. They were supposed to play at Berkeley, against Blythewood, and at Dorman. Against Dorman at home. Sumter does retain their game at Ridgeview due to having a bye week that week. And Dorman and Ridgeview used this opportunity to team up and fill their gaps that were caused by this. But now the question is, you know, does this start? There were a few teams that decided to move games up, but not nearly as big as Region 6 5A. Region 7 2A moved up their games to week 3, and Region 2 1A moved up region games up 2 weeks. Before we get to scores and previews and all of that, a few capacity notes that were, well, real quick, one more schedule change that happened that isn't happening this week, but still a big deal. Actually, two. The first one, Gaffney, Dutch Fork both lost their game for week 1, and they decided to team up, and they will play next week. That's going to be a fun game to watch. And this is why in college I love to say, first off, let me just say, I love the fact that these schools are able to move so quickly and be able to change on the fly. This has been such a great experiment in cooperation and collaboration over these last couple of years. We've seen that it's possible to be able to switch on the fly in less than a week's notice. In some cases, in just a day's notice, that we've seen schools lose a game and then a few hours later say, "Oh, we've got an opponent now. We've got a new opponent." So it's been great to see that. It's been great seeing that that happen. And Gaffney facing off against Dutch Fork is just one of those examples of being able to very quickly, you know, very quickly switch gears. Before we get into previews, which I may have to cut a little short, David Shelton said that he should be able to come on at 8, but I'm not 100% sure. So just in case, I'm going to save a couple of things to talk about just in case he's not able to come on. Thursday scores. Hannah Pamplinko beat McBee 45-26. And Marion beat Carver's Bay 28-20. Before I get into some games to watch this week and whatnot and go through the media poll and all of that, let me do a quick 5A preview before I take a break, and then we'll go from there. So 5A this season, starting up top at Region 1. Region 1, I think, is going to be interesting. Obviously, TL Hanna, I think, is still probably the team to beat in that region. But, you know, Hillcrest, I think, is a team that could certainly make a statement. I don't know if they're going to get above TL Hanna, but I think they're going to make it close. I think they're going to make it close this year. It was close last year, 4-0 to 3-1. And the game, you know, the one game that they lost was against TL Hanna. And, you know, it wasn't that close, 31-16. But, you know, I think they'll take a step up this year. But I'm going to pick TL Hanna to win the region. In Region 2, I think it's still Dorman's to lose. Burns, you know, they're close. They're close. There yet. Dorman is always the cream of the crop in Region 2, it seems. Region 3, I think Gaffney has that one in the bag. I don't think anyone's getting anywhere close to them even. Spring will do things. Nation 4 will do things. But, you know. Gaffney is the team to beat there. Region 4 is going to be interesting because Northwestern, you know, was the cream of the crop in that region last year, but especially with all the hype of the new stadium and with, you know, with all the pieces that they have over there, you know, I'll talk polls later. Northwestern is still ranked above Ridgeview this year at 3. This is going to be a very tight race, and I think Ridgeview may get the upper hand. I'm going to take Ridgeview to win this region. But, you know, Northwestern's going to be right behind them. I think Blythewood will be there, too. So, you know, that's a very strong region, Region 4. Region 5, I don't think anything's going to change. We heard it last year that, oh, this isn't the Dutch Fork of old. They still won the state championship. You know, they still beat just about everyone by, you know, they did beat everyone by double digits. And, you know, the only team that even gave them a run for their money at any point in the season was Carolina Forest. You know, Carolina Forest was able to put 42 points up on them. Everyone else, the next closest was Lexington at 13. First off, that just shows that if Carolina Forest would have been in any other classification, they probably would have won the state championship last year. But it also shows how strong Dutch Fork is, that they could, you know, I mean, they scored the most points they did all season last year against Carolina Forest with 68. Or excuse me, actually, no, I take that back. Scored more against White Knoll in week one. But Dutch Fork is still the team to beat there. River Bluff will be close, but no. In Region 6, Region 6 is going to be interesting. Because especially watching this team in practice and at scrimmages and jamborees and all of that, Carolina Forest is going to have some growing pains. And this is something I'm going to ask, you know, Ian when he comes on, what he thinks on this. Changing it to an all-region schedule and now losing Myrtle Beach, and we don't know who they're going to replace Myrtle Beach with. But that makes the schedule a lot easier than it was. And this team, I think for this team in particular, it helps them. Last year would have been the perfect year to have that grind of a schedule. That buzzsaw of a schedule. But this year, I think the change actually helps them because they're going to have some growing pains. Are they going to make the playoffs? Absolutely. Are they going to be probably runners? You know, are they at least going to be runners up in Region 6? Absolutely. But I think they're going to have some growing pains. And what makes it harder, too, is that they have to start off the region again at Sumter. Or actually, no, I take that back. I think they start off against Conway. Never mind. And then they have to travel to Sumter in week 3. But still, you know, having to travel to Sumter now again, you know, especially now they'll have revenge on their mind from last year, how they lost that game last year. But at the same time, you know, those games between Carolina Forest and Sumter will determine, and maybe it's a good thing that they get to travel to Sumter first, and then the real game against the Gamecocks is at home, because that may give them some confidence. And especially, without having Davin Jackson on the field. And with that, you know, without having Davin Jackson out there because of his torn ACL, that's going to help the Panthers a lot in that game. And I think it's going to hurt Sumter a lot. It's going to be a tight race. Basically, it's going to come down to whoever wins that game, again, like it did last year. Panthers might be able to pull it off. I'm going to put this one as a you know, toss-up. But I'll pick the Panthers to win the region. Do I think it'll happen? Not sure. But, you know, could it happen? Absolutely. Region 7, I think it's Goose Creek's to lose this year. And in Region 8, it's definitely Fort Dorchester's to lose this year. That'll get me to a break. I'll take a quick break, come right back. We'll potentially have David Shelton from the Post and Courier coming on. If not, I'll go through a full Week 0 preview, get you guys ready for Week 0. If he does come on, ask him some questions, get his thoughts on Week 0, all of that good stuff. So keep it locked right here on Sports Unlimited on Southern Sports Central.
Hey, yo, you ready? Let's do it.
We can't be stopped now, 'cause it's bad boy for life. We ain't
right here. Forever and ever. He's ever in bad. Come on.
Welcome back to Sports Unlimited right here on Southern Sports Central, and looks like we may not have David Shelton this morning, so I'm actually glad that I decided to hold off on some other things to talk about. That way I've got some stuff to talk about for this top of the hour, so, you know. Like I said, we went through the 5A preview already. You know, I threw out most of the stuff that I wanted to talk about for 5A for the preview of the season as a whole. Like I mentioned, until someone beats them, the team to beat will forever be Dutch Fork. I was about to say North Augusta because at the same time as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, you know, until someone beats them, like how North Myrtle Beach beat North Augusta in girls basketball last season. Actually, I take that back. Got David Shelton on. David, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. It's been been a crazy week for you, as it's been for all of us. Lots of cancellations, lots of changes due to COVID. What's been the feeling around Lowcountry on everything going on, and what have coaches been doing to keep themselves and their teams from going crazy over all the changes?
Well, I think the primary thing is they just stay focused on what's ahead. If they haven't got COVID by today, they know they're playing tonight or by yesterday. If they haven't had any issues, they've been focused on most of them just, you know, every day is a practice. You know, we hope that we get through it. And we get to Friday, we play a game. Next week may not be that case. They may not play a game. But most coaches around here, for the most part, have told me it's in the back of their mind. They certainly understand that it could happen, but as long as it hasn't, they're going to prepare just like they would any other week and hope that they get to Friday night and can play.
Some regions, not in the Lowcountry yet, but around the state, have pushed up region games in order to protect their region schedule, and especially with all the cancellations around the state this week. Have there been any rumblings of the potential of some regions pushing up region play in order to protect their region schedule?
Not that I have heard. Maybe Region 7A is a possibility. I think there have been some talks, but I know the 5A regions, there's two here, 7 and 8, they're not interested. They're going to play the schedule as it is. As one coach told me, he says, we're not going to hit the panic button and make all kind of wholesale changes. We're going to play the schedule that we have. If it means that we don't play in October and we miss region games, so be it. So none of them – No athletic director or football coach in Region 7 or 8 that I talked to had any stomach for that. They were just going to continue on their current track. Whether it's wise or not, it's not for me to decide, but that's their attitude. So I don't, you know, maybe Region 7, 4A, that is a cross-section of a couple of Charleston area schools and some Beaufort County schools, you know, maybe they get together and do something. The 3A conference has not mentioned anything about it, and the 2A conference, to my knowledge, coach in that region this week, and he said, yeah, they met as a region and they just decided to keep it as is. So it really kind of surprised a lot of people that Region 6-5A with Carolina Forest and Socastee and Conway and Sumter, it kind of surprised a lot of people they did it. I think that caught a lot of people off guard. They knew they were meeting, but I don't think they thought they were going to make that drastic change, and they did, which left a lot of schools scrambling for games. And as it turns out, there's some pretty good matchups that were created through that. But as far as the schools I cover, the 45 schools or so, public and private, I have not been able to find anybody that was in favor of that idea.
Has Region 7 and 8 come up with any sort of, you mentioned, since they're not moving the schedule, they're basically saying if we lose region games, we lose region games. Have they come up with contingency plans in terms of how playoff seeding would occur if that happened?
Well, the one coach I talked to said that they talked about some things, but nothing was set in stone. Again, they're kind of in wait and see mode. He kind of basically said, hey, if we get to region play and my team has to forfeit twice and that bumps us from first to third or fourth, so be it. We'll go in the playoffs. We'll do our best. This is a different time. I think the major fight back against that plan was playing everybody twice in your region. I don't think there was a whole lot of love for that plan. So, you could play them early and it counts, and then you get to October and that game comes up again and you got COVID, so you don't play it. I think if everyone could have figured out a schedule, maybe if this was done in early August and everyone would have had time to, redo their schedule, I think you might have saw some difference. But, as one coach said, he goes, the hay's in the barn. We're playing Friday night, and we have a schedule. That's what we're going to try to play, and we're going to hope that we can get through it. But if we have to forfeit a game for not playing it, then we'll, that's what we'll do. But we'll try to win the other ones that we do get to play. So, again, depending on the timing, you could lose two games. And maybe at the end of the year, if they didn't make the playoffs and there was a team out there that, maybe from Region 6 or somewhere that they didn't make their full schedule and didn't make the playoffs, maybe they would add a game. But I just haven't got a sense of whether right or wrong. I don't feel like there's a sense of urgency to totally redo the schedule. They're gonna do the best they can to try to get through it. If they have to lose some non-region games, okay, they'll live with that. But they'll try to be healthy for those four or five. Those two regions only have five teams, so you're only talking about four games, region games. So, any team that played two and won two is probably going to make the playoffs. That would be in a normal year. The two wins would probably get you in the top four out of the five teams. So, but if there are tiebreakers and there are some head-to-head stuff and all that, I don't know their plan. Because I don't think if they have a plan, they haven't made it known, and they're just going to sit on it and see what happens.
You mentioned, how the Region 6 5A deciding to go to the just region play affected teams down there, particularly Fort Dorchester. Have there been any rumblings, or have they said anything about who they might bring in as a replacement for Carolina Forest?
No, they don't have an opponent right now. Right now, they are officially on a bye week, that September 10th Friday, in a couple of weeks. Now, they're looking, I was told yesterday, they're looking out of state, Georgia, Florida coast, Florida border, maybe 3 hours away, looking in North Carolina, which I don't think they'll get a lot. I think if they find a team, maybe a team in the Carolinas will have an opening, but I kind of think, if they get an opening, if they get a team, it's going to be from Georgia.
Before the season starts, going around the Lowcountry, who are some of the teams to look out for? Obviously, Fort Dorchester looks like they're going to be strong. Same with Oceanside. Are there any other teams that may surprise some people this season?
Well, I think there are five teams in the Charleston area that are kind of a cut above everybody else. That would be Fort Dorchester, Oceanside, Goose Creek, West Ashley, and Hanahan. Now, that's reaching at the number five spot. After Hanahan, there's a lot of decent teams, James Island, Cane Bay, Somerville, Ashley Ridge, Phillip Simmons, You know, those teams are going to be competitive, but none of those I feel like could make a deep run in the playoffs. And I'll be honest, I don't know. After Oceanside and Ford, I don't know if there's a team that's going to make a deep run in the playoffs. You know, they're good, and they're good. You know, they're going to be of the better teams down here, but it's not a particularly deep list of teams in the low country this year. I mean, those four or five are probably going to be the best teams. And then you'll see where a Somerville or a Cane Bay, you know, how they're going to start and how they get through the season. Certainly capable, but kind of on that outside looking in right now from those top four or five.
Looking at some of the games tonight, the big matchup in the low country this week, is looking to answer one of those age-old questions that has been around forever in high school sports and in college as well. Can that powerful 2A or 3A team beat the 5A? Does Oceanside have any sort of chance against Goose Creek tonight, or is this just a game that they get, you know, as kind of a learning experience for them?
Oh no, they've got a real shot. Wouldn't shock me at all if they won it. This is the biggest regular season game in their school history. They've never played a 5A school where they're strong. Goose Creek's a little bit weak on the flip side, such as up front. Goose Creek's got four offensive linemen who are first-year starters. Oceanside's got five offensive linemen who are multi-year starters. Goose Creek's defensive line has really one guy that's back that played a bunch. Their defense only had like two or three guys coming back. And Oceanside with Colby Shirey transferring from Somerville to play quarterback, with Vaughn Blue, you know, maybe not quite the receivers that Goose Creek has. Certainly Goose Creek has a great passing game. But with the physicality of what I think this game's going to be up front, I mean, I would give Oceanside a real shot to win this game. It would not. The only thing that will surprise me tonight is if one team blows out the other, if it's like a 35-7 game. I just don't see that. I think, you know, Goose Creek has that passing game, and they got that the really good running back. They're probably going to feed him and try to establish him and make Oceanside get physical. The depth would be a concern. You know, there's probably more guys at Goose Creek than Oceanside's got. So, you know, if Oceanside starts dropping some players, that could be an issue. But I think this is really a coin flip based on the matchups. I really think Oceanside can win this game tonight. Not sure they will, but and I wouldn't, you know, advise anybody out there listening to go put the money on it. But it would not shock me if Oceanside won this game. It would not be a huge upset in my mind.
Are there any other games that you've got your eye on for tonight or this weekend that should be good ones?
Well, that's funny. I haven't checked the schedule to see if it changed overnight. Because that's kind of what you got to do now. You got to look and see what happened. You know, so I checked the Twitter and see if, you know, oh, we got COVID last night at the JV game or whatever. But I think Spartanburg and Greer are going to play. I think that's a really interesting game. You know, the holy war down here between Portugal and Bishop England. Again, not a marquee game. Two teams that are just coming off COVID that are probably going to be a little stale. Didn't get a lot of scrimmage stuff in. So, but it is a very intense rivalry. I mean, it's a rivalry that goes way back. They went a long time without playing, and they rekindled it a few years ago. So I think from an interest standpoint, that'll draw some interest here in the Lowcountry. But like I said, I hesitate to say any games because I don't know which ones they are. Maybe you know, but I haven't had a chance to do the hour-long scroll through Twitter looking for schedule changes.
Luckily, I've created a list with yourself, Lou, Ian, all the writers, and a lot of the and some of the other news people that, you know, I keep track of things much more fluidly that way than I ever do just trying to scroll through my entire Twitter feed. So it's certainly going to be a crazy year. Are you going to Goose Creek tonight?
No, actually Rob Gant will be covering that game for us. he covers Goose Creek with the Goose Creek Gazette. So having two people there, we share the same stuff. Having two people there would make sense. So I'll probably head over to Bishop England in Portugal and cover the Holy War. And we may have one other game covered, Pinewood in St. John's. There's actually a jamboree tonight in Dorchester County with Somerville, Ashley Ridge, Woodland, and Fort. I don't think they're going to get much coverage because it is a jamboree, but they'll actually be doing their countywide jamboree tonight, which is a little later than usual, but as it worked out, it's probably better they made it this date.
Yeah, I noticed that none of those schools in Region 7 were playing in Week 0, and I was kind of surprised, but I guess that's the reason for why they're doing that. Well, good. Have fun tonight. It should be a good one over at Bishop England. And hopefully there aren't any more last minute changes that throw us for a loop.
Yeah, we'll get through it, and we'll get through it week by week. Assuming there's games every week, there'll be some games, and we'll get through it. And I'm concerned about some things, but I'm also just focused on doing my job and having fun on Friday night and going to see football. Hopefully that will enable us. Hopefully we'll get to do that every week.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, at least you don't have to worry about weather tonight. I have to worry about if my game's going to get lightninged out tonight.
Well, that has been a problem in the Lowcountry this week. It has been stormy every night. And I think they're calling for about a 50-50 chance of thunderstorms. And, you know, where Portugal is located, right down there on the water, that's the sea storms, as they call them, come in. So we may have an issue, but hopefully if it rains, it's after 10 o'clock.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, thanks for joining me this morning, David, and look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good day.
You too. That was David Shelton from the Post and Courier. And, hey, so I may not be the only one that may have some problems tonight. Because, yeah, it's supposed to rain up in West Brunswick tonight. I was looking at the forecast tonight, and it was saying, you know, thunderstorms. I forget. Let me actually look. Let me be a meteorologist for a second and look to see what the percentage was on that. Because I remember there was like a, you know, this was as of last night. Let me update it. It was 44% chance last night. Let's see if it's changed since then. But while I wait for that to load up, let me go through some of the other notes. Like I mentioned, let's look at some of those games to watch. I mentioned already Goose Creek versus Oceanside. That's one game to watch tonight. Gaffney and Spartanburg, as David mentioned, that's going to be a good one. Greenwood and Hillcrest, that's going to be a good one as well. That's going to be a game that, both of those schools are expected to be at the top of their region. And so the question is, it's 5A versus 4A game, so it's not exactly, it's not exactly a game that, it's not exactly a game that, it's a big thing for region play or anything like that, but, it's still one of those games, and that's one of the things I was mentioning it before. That's one of the things I like about high school sports as compared to college. You get the rankings, you get the speculation on things, but the game is won, lost on the field, and you don't have to worry about, if I schedule this opponent, lower opponent, that we should be able to beat, and I lose, that suddenly means my season's over. You can bounce back. All that really matters is your region play. And and it creates fun matchups like we've seen this week. It creates that potential for those matchups to see, you know, what can happen. And that's what's fun to see. You want to see those non-region matchups. And, you know, that's what I think would happen if you expanded the playoffs in college, is that you would see a lot more big-time non-conference matchups, because one loss wouldn't automatically knock you out of the playoffs. Like I mentioned, let me just let you know, yeah, now it's up to 51% chance of rain, scattered thunderstorms tonight throughout the evening out in Shalot. So I may have an either a very short or a very, very long night tonight. For those of you who are Carolina Forest fans who listen to me on a weekly basis, and you're you want to know if the game's gonna go on, stay tuned on Carolina Forest Panther Ball Network, CFHS Panther FBN on Twitter. Follow me there. And whenever I get an update, after I get off the show, I'm going to text Athletic Director Tripp Satterwhite, see if he has anything on what's going on and whatnot for tonight. So be sure to stay tuned on Twitter. But like I said, let me go back before I take a quick break, and then I'll have Lou Bezek from the state coming on in just a little bit. Going through some other games tonight that should be fun to see. Wren and Dutch Fork are playing tonight. That's going to be a pretty good game. I think Dutch Fork should be able to win the game, but it's still going to be an interesting game to watch. Ridgeview opens up their brand new facility, Westwood, tonight. That should be an interesting game again. I think Ridgeview should be able to win that one, but should be a fun one either way. Great Collegiate and Camden are playing tonight. That should be a good one. Lakeview and Aynor are playing tonight. That should be an interesting game. 1A versus 3A. And then Lake City and Dillon are playing tonight. And then South Florence are also opening up their new digs against Bluffton. But unfortunately for them, I forget if I mentioned this before, but Horry County Schools announced that their stadiums will not have capacity limits, so they will be 100% capacity. But Bruin Stadium, at least, I haven't heard about the other Florence 1 schools, but at least tonight, Bruin Stadium will be limited to 50% capacity. So kind of disappointing for them that, you know, they don't get to open their stadium with a full crowd. You know, unfortunately, that's the world we live in now, but, you know, it's still disappointing. I mean, granted, two NFL teams had their new digs with empty stadiums last year, so it could be worse. It could certainly be worse. So I'll take a quick break. Come right back. We'll have Lou Bezek from the state coming on when we return right here on Sports Unlimited on Southern Sports Central.
breaks out loud. That isn't cages, it's on razors. Just have to make it.
Welcome back to Sports Unlimited right here on Southern Sports Central. My name is Brandon Biscobing, waiting for Lou Bezjak from the state to call in. And while I wait, run through a few more notes around the state. Like I mentioned, went through all of the games to watch, but, you know, still lots of good games tonight. I'll be at Carolina Forest up over the across the border up in North Carolina for their game against West Brunswick, weather permitting, of course. But we'll keep an eye on that throughout the day. And like I mentioned earlier, if you want to keep track of that, follow me on CFHS Panthers FBN to keep track of everything there. We'll run through the media poll while we wait for Lou Bezjak to call in. Up in 5A, surprise, surprise, who's at number one and got all the number one votes? It's Dutch Fork. Like I mentioned, there's not really much else to say about Dutch Fork other than until someone beats them, they're still going to be the top dog in 5A. Fort Dorchester is at 2. Northwestern's at 3. Dorman and T.L. Hanna are tied for 4th. Ridgeview is at 6. Gaffney at 7. Burns at 8. Sumter at 9. And River Bluff is at 10. Also receiving votes there, Spartanburg, Chapin, Hillcrest, Nation Ford, Malden, and West Ashley. Kind of surprising to not see Carolina Forest up there, but I kind of get it. At the same time, they've lost a lot of pieces, and there are some question marks about you know how good they're going to be after losing all those pieces. But we'll have to we'll have to wait and see what happens there. 4A, AC Flora is at 1 with 7 first-place votes. Myrtle Beach is at 2 with 2 first-place votes. Greenville is at 3 with 1 first-place vote. Catawba Ridge at 4. South Point at 5. North Myrtle Beach at 6. Westside at 7. Buford at 8. Irmo at 9. Greer at 10. Also receiving votes are North Augusta, May River, Greenwood, and Airport. Kind of surprising that North Myrtle Beach dropped as low as they did, considering, you know, they made it to the state championship game last season. But I kind of get it at the same time, considering they've lost at least a few pieces, not ton, but they've lost some. They've lost a little bit, and thus, you know, it's something that, you know, may weigh on the pollsters as a result. And now, Lou Redpeck joins me this morning. Lou, how's it going?
Hey, Brandon, how you doing?
I'm getting some feedback from you for some reason. Okay, now it's gone. Okay. I was hearing myself coming back. I was like, that's weird. But good morning. It's great to have football season back, but unfortunately this week has been pretty hectic. Lots of cancellations and changes. What has the feeling been around the Midlands on everything going on, and what have the coaches been doing to keep themselves and their teams from going crazy with all the changes?
I mean, just be ready to adapt on a daily basis. I mean, just found out right now before it went on air, got a game, it's private school in Fox Creek, had games canceled last night. Ben Lippin was supposed to play Saturday in Fox Creek today, but they scheduled a game for Saturday. I mean, yesterday, Chapin and Airport had games canceled for the second time this week, so they decided just to play each other tonight, making a game 24 hours notice, so no prep time. So, I mean, it's going to be like this for the first few weeks until region play begins. So, I mean, it's just going to be flexible to go with the flow, and when region play begins, you can only play so many teams there, so that will be kind of limit who you can schedule on those weeks.
Hey, some breaking news. I love it, and that was something I was actually going to ask you about because, you know, Fox Creek, I was thinking it was too late for them to get a replacement, but they got Ben Lippin. Do you think we're going to see that, especially in a situation like that where it's so last minute, where we're going to see some Skiva public school collaboration this season?
Yeah, you can. I mean, some public schools don't want to play Skiva, but Fox Creek is kind of like a, I mean, they're a smaller school. They're not a big, really big school. So, they're going to – they would be willing to come play, and it's interesting. I mean, whatever it takes to have a game. I talked to Chapin coach yesterday. I mean, he's like, I just want to make sure I could tell my players I did everything I can to schedule a game, and they did. I mean, they scheduled a game. I think they finalized it at noon yesterday, and they'll play tonight at 7:30. So, I mean, to make sure that they have a game each week. I mean, they had been preparing for Keenan, but Keenan canceled yesterday morning. So, I mean, it's just going to be one of those, at least for the first few weeks. I think things will kind of slow down a little bit as the season goes along, though.
You mentioned the Chapin head coach, and, you know, especially, like you mentioned, with both teams losing two games before teaming up, what else have both coaches been saying all week about just the craziness of this whole week, and how relieved are they to finally find a dance partner that, you know, can be steady?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. I mean, you got teams trying to schedule games and just forever. I mean, I had a team from Florida that wanted to come up this way next week. They wanted to play Dutch Fork or anyone else that would play them, and just they're just teams are just wanting to play. They don't want to miss that week. I mean, I know there's 5 weeks scheduled during the season, but I mean, they want to. I mean, this is the first week of the season. You don't want to wait those extra few weeks. So I think they'll do whatever they can to play. I mean, we saw that with Dutch Fork yesterday. I mean, they scheduled a game with Gaffney because Irmo got canceled, and they were supposed to have a home game, but they'll still go to Gaffney now, and that puts them at, I think, only 3 home games for the season because they only had 9 scheduled, and they, I think 6 road games and 3 home games. So they'll do whatever they have. Teams are going to do whatever they have just to play each week, I think.
Especially for a team like Dutch Fork, like you mentioned, only having 9 games on the schedule right now, and you mentioned Florida teams being interested, you've got Georgia teams, North Carolina teams. Do you think we're going to see more games from out-of-state opponents if it comes to that last minute?
They'll try, I think. I mean, I think some of the districts maybe kind of shy away a little bit of having someone come from out of state to come in. I mean, that's kind of why I don't think the Florida game with the Bertram Trail happened, and they're playing Gaffney instead just because of that. I think if it's close to, like, just across the border, yeah, I think you'll see it. In fact, you'll see it tonight. Scheduled game, I mean, Buford's playing Richmond Hill out of Georgia. I mean, a lot of times those – like Buford and Bluffton, those they play Georgia teams anyway, and you saw it with like North Myrtle and Myrtle. They play teams from North Carolina and stuff. So, yeah,
yep,
I think you'll see
Carolina
it. I mean,
playing West Brunswick.
Yeah, like you said, you'll see things like that. So, I mean, I think they'll do whatever they can to get games in, no matter if it's playing a private school, it's playing an out-of-state team, just so they can get games in, at least in a non-region schedule. When region schedule begins, you won't have that flexibility.
We talked about this last week, but especially now after a day like Monday and how crazy this week has been, has that changed the minds of those in charge, how they're thinking about the potential of pushing region schedules up, or is everything locked in now?
I think everything's kind of locked in. I think region 2-3A announced yes, or 2-1A with Great Falls, Louisville, C.A. Johnson,
yeah.
Lamar, that they announced yesterday that they're going to move things up. I talked to the C.A. Johnson coach last night, and yeah, they're going to move things up. Pretty much everyone that hadn't moved up isn't staying the same, and we know some coaches have been vocal about that. I mean, I talked to Mickey Wilson this week from Myrtle Beach, and he definitely was not a fan of what Region 6-5A did. But I mean, it is what it is now, and they could have played Carolina Forest next week, and they kind of made a stand to not because of what happened. So they found their opponents. I'm pretty sure they're all full up. I think they're missing one game still, but it'll be interesting to see what that lingers into future scheduling with teams, you know, because Myrtle Beach usually schedules those teams like Conway and Carolina Forest just for good gates. But now we'll see if they don't now just because what happened this year.
Did any of the teams like Ridgeview and Blythewood, who both had Region 6-5A opponents on their schedule, did they say anything about what happened with Region 6?
Not really, because they were each supposed to play 2 teams, and they'll each still play 1. Ridgeview will still play Sumter on the 3rd, and Blythewood will still play Conway. Blythewood still needs to find a game. Ridgeview found the opponent for the 2nd game that they're going to play Dorman. They're going to host Dorman at the end of September on the 24th, which turns out to be – it's going to be a fantastic matchup. So, just Blythewood just has one game to find.
Moving on to on-the-field stuff and previewing 5A, is Dutch Fork still the team to beat? Are they going to six-peat this year?
Well, they definitely are the most vulnerable. I mean, I would say not as far as – as star power goes and experience, especially at quarterback, they're probably might be one of the biggest question marks going in out of this run they're on. But They had that a few years ago when Ty Olenchuk was just a sophomore, and he and Grayson Underwood battled for the quarterback job. Olenchuk ended up winning it, really taking control in like week one or two, and then, I mean, he went on to be the quarterback for 3 years and be one of the greatest, best quarterbacks in school history. So this year, a little different. You have Devin Patterson and Aliam Appler. I think Patterson's going to get the start tonight against Wren. And we'll see, though. It gives him a little more dimension. He's been with the program for, all of his career, so he knows everything. It's just getting – and he got some weapons around him, so that makes him a little bit more vulnerable. They got a new defense coordinator, a couple new other assistant coaches, so that's a little bit different. But they're still talented. I mean, Antonio Williams and Jarvis Green – I think are two of the best skill guys at their positions in the state. So, and defensively, I think they're going to be fine. But I think teams think this could be the year they can get them. But that might motivate Tom Knotts and the rest of the crew to keep this streak going for sure.
Yeah, I heard that last year too. People saying, "Oh, Dutch Fork isn't what they used to be," and they still won the state championship quite handily.
Well, they were pretty good last year. I mean, you had a Division I guy at quarterback, and you had three Division I guys at receiver. I mean, yeah, they're a little bit different. I mean, Will Taylor was – there was question marks to him because he played at Skeezer the first few years, but he proved early on that he was definitely up for the challenge, and now is at Clemson and was also drafted in the Major League Baseball draft as well.
Dutch Fork, creating both great baseball and football players, both with Olenchuk and Taylor. As of right now, and we talked about it, they only have 9 games right now, but like you said, they're playing basically their entire non-region schedule on the road and against some very tough competition. Do you think, especially with this team, like you mentioned, not being quite as experienced as it has been in the past, does this help or hurt them going down the stretch and going into the playoffs?
Oh, it definitely will help them. I mean, a lot of these teams they could see in the playoffs, I mean, the Wrens and they're obviously not in their classification tonight, but, I mean, their non-region games against Spartanburg, Burns, Gaffney, Greenwood, I mean, they're all teams that they could possibly play in the state championship game. I know they're upper state teams, but, yeah, there's no hurt to playing these guys like that. So I think it would only help them. It's going to get better. They're going to make them better and tougher each week, especially being on the road. They're only – home game in that of that group is against Spartanburg. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be fun to see next week when they go to Gaffney, which should be a great atmosphere and a great game.
Who are some of the other teams that you think might surprise some people this season in 5A?
I think Ridgeview has a really good shot. I mean, talk about them. They open up their new stadium tonight. I think they're a very experienced team. They got a new coach and Derek Howard, but I mean, he's been at Ridgeview. He was an assistant. He was actually the first quarterback in school history, on the first team in school history. So, and they got a lot of college talent on there, and they're big. And see if they can live up with the height. I know they. I mean, they've had great. Coach Parks done a good job in building this program back up, but this is really the first year that they really think they can compete and play in the state championship game. So we'll see if they can handle that. They got a tough non-region schedule. Mentioned game against Dorman. They play Great Collegiate, who's also pretty good. And they got Sumter. So they'll have tough games as well as along with Northwestern and Spring Valley and Blythewood in the region. So I look for them, at least around here. River Bluff, they've been really solid the last couple years. They got question mark at quarterback. Have to replace a lot of guys, but and then Chapin, they got probably one of the most talented trios around, and Jaden Bradford, who's in the top 100 for the class of 2024 that came out this week. Bennett Galloway, running back's going to NC State, receiver Xavier Shorts going to Appalachian State, so it'll be fun to watch around here. And then you'll have the rest. I think Fort Dorchester is going to be really good. Sumter's going to be strong again. In upstate, I think Burns really thinks they have a team that is probably Reggie Shaw's one of his best since he took over. Spartanburg got Raheem Jeter at quarterback. So I think it should be fun in Class 5A to see how it all shake up. Gaffney, like you said, they played Dutch Fork, and they got a really good quarterback in Grayson Loftus, who's a Division I caliber guy. So it should be 5A should be definitely fun to see.
You mentioned Ridgeview and them opening up their new stadium tonight with a pretty big matchup against Westwood. What do the Redhawks have to do tonight to potentially spoil the homecoming for the Blazers?
Well, they got to stop that passing game and try to put some pressure on Andre Washington. Ridgeview got about, I would say, anywhere between 3 and 6 guys they could plug in at receiver that are fast. They're not the biggest guys, but they're speed and they're precise. And I think they need to stop that passing game to have a shot. And on offense, I mean, Ridgeview's big up front. And if you see them, they definitely pass the eye test for sure. They got to find a way to run the ball. I saw Westwood play last week. They weren't too impressive for sure. They got a good running back in Julian Milligan, but definitely quarterback's an issue and offensive line as well.
Are there any other games that you're looking at around the Midlands tonight?
In 5A or just in general?
Just in general.
AC Flora and Brooklyn Casey should be really good. Flora is defending 4A state champs. Brooklyn Casey got a lot of expectations coming in. They could put a lot of points on the board. So see how Brooklyn Casey's offense matches against a good AC Flora defense, which lost the whole defensive line from last year, but see how they play and see who plays a quarterback for Flora. They rotated guys last week in their jamboree, so see how they do their quarterback system as well. So Great Collegiate and Camden should be good. Both teams are ranked near the top in their classification. Question mark for Gray is their quarterback going to play? Had a tough injury last week, Trey Robinson, hurting his neck, so we'll see his availability for tonight.
Have you heard the latest on him? Is he?
Yeah, we'll
just
see. I mean, they were hoping he was going to play, but I'm not sure. Just by being there last night, I would think it would be tough for him to play tonight. But yeah. And we'll see. Being a non-region game, they might hold him out and just get him ready. They got a tough one next week too. They'll play Oceanside, so. I mean, their non-region schedule is pretty tough. Camden and Ridgeview and Oceanside and Legion. I mean, it's pretty tough. And then they got a real tough region as well with Newberry and Saluda, who are going to both be really good, in Batesburg. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was held out tonight.
Where are you going to be tonight?
I'll be at AC Flora in Brooklyn, Casey. Should be a fun matchup, like I said. Be a big crowd, and I know – Brooklyn Casey's been looking forward to this one, so we'll see if it can live up to the matchup in the first week.
Yeah, that should be a fun matchup. It's great to have football back. Have fun over at Brooklyn Casey tonight, and yeah, great talking to you as always. And we'll talk to you next week, Lou.
All right, Brandon.
Thank you. Once again, that was Lou Bejak from the state. Always always fun talking to him. And, yeah, wow, breaking news coming out from Lou that just maybe a little more than 12 hours after the fact, or just pretty much 12 hours after the news broke that game was being canceled, Fox Creek able to find an opponent for their game. That's crazy that they were able to find an opponent in Ben Lippin. And that's the thing that I kind of, you know, obviously you don't like all these cancellations. You don't like COVID. You don't like what it's doing, but it's making people be innovative. It's making these teams say, "Hey, let's try this. Let's try this." And you know, it's fun to see them be able to switch it up on the fly like that. Before I take a quick break, and I've got again coming on at 9. Run through the rest of the classification rankings. Like I mentioned before, it's kind of surprising that North Myrtle Beach was ranked so low, but I kind of understand why at the same time. Going down to 3A, Daniel is at is in first place with 10 first-place votes. Chapman and Camden are tied for second. Oceanside Collegiate at 4. Wren at 5. Dillon at 6. Chester at 7. Gilbert at 8. Brooklyn Casey at 9. And Union County at 10. Also receiving votes are Aynor, Woodruff, Clinton, Fairfield, Palmetto. Down in 2A, Abbeville, surprise, surprise, there's the cream of the crop. In 2A, 10 first-place votes. Redfield at 3rd, at 3rd, Barnwell at 4th, Chesney 5th, Newberry 6th, Andrew 7th, Saluda 8th, Batesburg, Leesville 9, Christchurch 10, and also receiving votes are St. Joe's, Andrew Jackson, Woodland, Peloton, Shaw, North Central, Chesterfield, Silver Bluff, and Blacksburg. And then at 1A, again, surprise, surprise, Southside Christian at 1 with 10 first-place votes, Lakeview at 2, Mar 3, Whale Branch 4, Bamberg Earhart at 5, Vilhilda at 6, Baptist Hill at 7, Wagner Sally at 8, C.A. Johnson 9th, Louisville 10th, and also receiving votes are Carver's Bay, Johnsonville, McBee, North slash Hunter Kennard Tyler, Ridge Spring Mineta, Allendale Fairfax, C.E. Murray, Great Falls, and Dan Polar. So those are your rankings, the preseason rankings, the preseason media poll. One quick final note before I take a quick break. Forgot to, well, it's not really time for it, and was running out of time with Lou, but the MLK Bash will be returning this season on the basketball court. On the girls' side, it will be Ridgeview, Northwood Academy, South Point, AC Flora, Westwood, Larchland, East Clarendon, Wren, North Augusta, Cardinal Newman, Camden, and Keenan. On the boys' side, it will be Wilson, AC Flora, Sumter, Irmo, Lexington, Spring Valley, York Prep, Blythewood, Legacy Early College, Ridgeview, Collegiate, and Keenan. And that should be a fun that should be some fun games. The matchups will be announced at a later date. So be sure to be on the lookout for that. A few other quick notes before I take a quick break. Big bloated Dillon on the football field. Nigel George will miss his entire senior season due to an injury. And while I think they're still going to be one of the better teams in 3A, that's going to hurt them. That's going to hurt them a lot. Campbell Smithick, said he's first the basketball court. Brandon Gardner decided to transfer from Gray Collegiate to Word of God Christian Academy. We talked about it last week with Lou, and this is just the world we live in now. That, you know, the top players in a state are going to want to go to the prep schools and go to the overtime league, go to the G League. You know, they're going to focus on themselves, you know. And coaches are just going to have to adapt. And finally, Campbell Smithick has decided to leave Conway to play the rest of his high school career in Mississippi. He's already committed to Ole Miss, so designed to be closer to the college to get ready for playing in college at Ole Miss. So I'll take a quick break, And then come right back. We'll have Ian Guerin on when we come back right here on Sports Unlimited on Southern Sports Central.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Touching warm, reaching out, touching me.
Welcome back to Sports Unlimited right here on Southern Sports Central. And as promised, got Ian Guerin from Maori News on. Ian, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Pretty good, pretty good. I'm sure you're enjoying actually trying to worry about on-the-field football instead of the craziness that we had to deal with all this past week. Been the feeling going around the Grand Strand on everything going on, especially with Region 6 5A, and what have coaches been doing to keep themselves and their teams from going crazy over all the changes?
Yeah, I mean, I think last year, in a lot of ways, was a dry run for them. I think they learned how to adapt pretty quick. I mean, look, I mean, Myrtle Beach is a perfect example. I mean, they had, you know, two games put in jeopardy because the decision that Region 6-5A made, and then they turned around and scrapped the Carolina Forest game, and out of it, we've now kind of seen them, you know, at least in terms of what their long-term goals are, kind of improve their standing. I mean, going to Dillon is going to be a great test for them. You know, going to Oceanside, you know, is going to be a good test for them. Oceanside has a really, really good offensive line. They've got a good running back. They've got some great defensive players. I mean, I think there's, you know, last time I looked, you know, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 or 10 future college players, most of whom are going to be in the Division I ranks. So, I mean, Soxty, Myrtle Beach was a casualty, but realistically, Myrtle Beach doesn't get much of a push from Soxty just based on what Soxty can do well. You know, Myrtle Beach Conway was a casualty. You know, Conway was awful last year, and I think they're going to be better this year. But again, I don't think they provide much of a test, you know, for Myrtle Beach. So I think we've seen that schools will adapt. You know, schools can, you know, change on the fly. We, you know, I think we had, you know, I think we've had a couple games for this week announced in the last 48 hours, you know. So if teams and coaches are willing to do that, then I think then you can kind of look forward and say, okay, in 2022, if we are not being impacted by COVID the way we are now, you know, what can we do with that then? You know, what can we do with some advanced planning and not having games wrecked left and right like we are right now? And I think that's what we're seeing. You know, the last, and it's not just the Region 6-5A decision. It's really the last 3 weeks because we've had so many quarantines, and we have had a few Class A regions, you know, move their region slates up as well. So I think what it's proving to everybody is that everybody is a lot more adaptable than maybe they ever thought that they were before.
One thing I was trying to figure out, especially after Monday, and you'd be the one that may know better than I would, it seems like this year we've had more cancellations this year than we did at the beginning of last year.
Yeah, and part of that is that school started earlier and the football season started earlier. You know, so everybody kind of went back into that normal school and practice and game routine. And I think it happened, you know, right as Delta was really starting to crank up too. So, you know, I think that plays a large role in it. You know, kids are also in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Most of the schools last year were still virtual, you know, even when school started. So there wasn't that risk involved. There wasn't the exposures, the quarantines necessary because the kids were, you know, sitting at home in front of a laptop and then going to practice and you know, the, you know, taking 60 guys outside realistically, because you're separating them by position groups and things like that too, is fairly low risk in the grand scheme of things. I mean, we've seen now that there are other things that are going on that are, you know, that are going to put a game or games plural in jeopardy. And, you know, I think that's the impact that we're feeling right now.
Like you mentioned before, the big thing coming out this week was that Region 6-5A pushed their region schedule up. This set off a firestorm, like you mentioned, especially with Myrtle Beach around the area. What has been, I know Mickey Wilson was not happy at all about it, what have been some of the other reactions to the decision, and how did this decision come to be?
Yeah, I mean, we saw last night from West Florence coach Jody Jenneret too. I mean, he kind of vocalized some of his frustrations with it. And, you know, and for him, I think it's even more impactful than what it was for Myrtle Beach because, you know, Jody is over there trying to unveil a brand new stadium, mm-hmm. you know, that they fought tooth and nail to get and are so, they're so excited to show it off. And they can't get anybody to come in and play, you know, and naturally when you open a new stadium, you're not going to want to bring in, you know, somebody like Dutch Fork or Gaffney, you know, those were some of the other teams that were looking for games, you know, for next week, you know, so he's looking for somebody that he has a, you know, he feels like his team can beat, right? So that kind of put him in a spot. So last night, you know, the Florence Morning News runs their story about them switching their game next week to a road game. And they're going to get a nice little payout. You know, Clover is cutting them a check to come play that game. You know, so we're kind of seeing that next evolution of, you know, the competition for games. You know, Mickey Wilson at Myrtle Beach is splitting the gate with both Oceanside and Dillon. He's going to have the home game against Fort Dorchester, which should be an okay gate. And then they're trying to add one more home game as well. You know, so financially, we're seeing that the people who can change and are willing to, willing to go on the road when maybe you wouldn't think that they would are going to be rewarded. You know, is it a huge payday? Is it a, you know, Alabama giving, you know, Louisiana, you know, $600,000 to come play? No, but you know, it's enough to cover the bus trip. It's enough to make sure that you're staying in the black, which all that's really important. I've got a story coming out later this morning on, you know, kind of how the, you know, Horry County Schools is going to go forward this year and why they're doing it the way they are. So, you know, the teams that can adapt are going to be rewarded. The teams that put their foot down, especially in 2021, are going to probably be, you know, left wondering what could have been.
One of those teams, I mean, they kind of got lucky, you know, in terms of being able to pick up. But one of those teams that kind of did put their foot down is Myrtle Beach. And what has the reaction been to how they handled everything, basically throwing aside what would have been, you and I talked about it last week, even, you know, we thought even with the, you know, Region 6-5A push game up, that the Myrtle Beach game would have been, you know, one of the biggest games of the year, and thus, you know, it was a shoe-in to still be on the schedule, and now it isn't. What has been the reaction to that, especially considering, you know, how that may impact things in the future?
No, and I think that's I think that's what people need to keep an eye on. And, you know, whether, you know, Mickey Wilson is going to hold a grudge, you know, or whether Mark Morris is going to hold a grudge, you know, whether Jody Jenrette is going to say, you know what, we don't need to go play Conway. We don't need to go play Carolina Forest or Sauk Ossee. You know, we're going to start trending toward the Midlands, you know, or we're going to look at games against Sumter, you know, which, you know, I think that there is kind of a feel that the Horry County teams drove this thing, and we know that they had control of Region 6-5A because they have four of the five teams. So if the district had come in and told their ADs all to do the same thing, it was going to happen. You know, there was no stopping it. But the reality of the situation is that this was Sumter's proposal. You know, it was Curtis Johnson at Sumter, who wanted to make this happen to secure games for everybody, to give them a backup plan, you know, for the region. And it worked for them. You know, that's great. But doing what's right for you doesn't mean that there won't be consequences. And the reverberations of that are what we've seen with, you know, Mickey Wilson and Jody Jenrette the last few days. You know, they're saying, you know, not only are we taking this off the books for this year, but next year when we're looking at redoing our schedule and when realignment comes out, we're going to do what's best for us. And, you know, we might not see some of that back scratching that we've seen in the past.
How, especially, you know, because Coach Morris mentioned it specifically at the CNB kickoff press conference that, you know, they already had problems finding games because of how strong they are and teams not necessarily wanting to play them. How hard, not only just, you know, first off, is there an update for next week, but also moving forward into, you know, into subsequent years, how hard is it now going to be for Carolina Forest to find games?
Yeah, and this predates your time on the grandstand a little bit, but things have changed in a hurry both directions. I mean, obviously, you know, in 2011, I believe it was, when Carolina Forest had one of their best seasons prior to the Mark Morris area, they were playing teams like King Street. And you know, they had no business playing those teams. They were 4A, you know, back when the state was four classifications, and they did that. Mark, when he got there, he did start changing things. He did start scheduling tougher games. He did start, you know, doing things that would show him what his team needed to work on come playoff time. And that's why we've seen, you know, them only lose to Dutch Fork the last 2 years. You know, I've said it on your show before, if it wasn't for Dutch Fork, I believe that Carolina Forest is playing in the state championship game each of the last 2 years. You know, do they win? I don't know, but I think they get there. You know, so we've seen that. We've seen that slide. Now, on the other side of things, you know, if you're just looking at Myrtle Beach, Myrtle Beach's schedule has gotten worse the last few years. You know, them concentrating on so many local games and, you know, hey, okay, this year we're going to play, you know, this year and next we'll play Conway. The year after that we'll play Sauk City. Well, then it kind of spiraled into, okay, we're going to play Sauk City, Conway, and Carolina Forest every year. Well, on paper, yeah, that looks great because you're playing 3-5A teams in non-region. But the reality, again, is that, you know, in any given year, at least one, if not two, of those teams are not going to be very good. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just that's not me knocking them. That's historically speaking, the last 5 years, you know, Sauk City has been down. You know, Conway had one really good year in the last 5 years. And the rest of it, it's kind of been something that the coaches, you know, maybe want to forget about. So, but before that started happening, Myrtle Beach was playing Burns. You know, they played them like 3 years in a row. You know, Myrtle Beach was playing West Florence when West Florence was a 4A team. I mean, this is, you know, before the state went to five classes. So that was the scheduling kind of MO for Mickey before, you know. So, again, we've seen both sides of it. We've seen what Carolina Forest could do, you know, when they started challenging themselves more. We've seen what Myrtle Beach can do. I mean, obviously, they made two state championship games in the last 3 years, you know. But when it comes to those early season games, I think we're going to see them kind of trend back toward, you know, the early years of Mickey Wilson.
Have you heard any update yet from either Tripp or Mark where, you know, if there is a potential for the Panthers to get an opponent for next week?
Yeah, no, we exchanged a lot of messages, and Tripp and I talked yesterday as well, and I was kind of telling them teams that I knew were off, and they were telling me who they had already kind of checked off the list, or, you know, so they're in wait and see mode. And I think I think a lot of teams are going to be in wait and see mode, where they might have to wait until Sunday or Monday of game week, see who had cancellations, see who's still a viable opponent for that week. And then I think you're going to start seeing, you know, some of that madness happening that we've seen the last 48 hours. You know, people need to play games. You know, they want to play games. I mean, they didn't get into coaching and playing football so they could sit on their butts on Friday nights. You know, so I think that's more of what we're going to see, especially probably for the next month before teams start getting into region play and things like that. I think you're gonna see a lot of people announcing games on Mondays and Tuesdays and even Wednesdays.
Makes my life next week a lot more difficult trying to figure out who I need to call to get rosters and everything. But and on top of that, you know, I don't know if you've heard anything more, and I don't know if North Carolina has different rules, but what in terms of weather around here? Because I know there's a thunderstorm forecast for tonight.
You cut out a little bit. I couldn't hear what you asked me.
Oh, okay. I asked, what's the official, and I don't know if it's different up in North Carolina than here in South Carolina, but what's the official guidelines for weather?
Official guidelines for weather? I mean, it's football. They play in rain, and they don't play in lightning.
Well, for
I don't know
lightning.
If that's what you're asking me.
Yeah, for lightning and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, those are fairly universal across the country. I mean, if there's lightning within, you know, 10 miles usually is a pretty good threshold. I think it's 8 miles at the NCAA level because they're usually using a little bit better equipment. But, yeah, I mean, that's what they're checking for. You know, the good thing about, you know, I'm assuming you're speaking about Carolina Forest at West Brunswick, is that West Brunswick has turf. You know, so they don't have that added concern of, are we going to tear up this field and not be able to play here for 3 weeks?
Yeah, but it's getting interesting to see if they'll be able to hopefully get that game in tonight. Looking ahead to the season on the field in 5A, how do you think playing region games twice this season is going to impact Region 6 teams? in terms of getting into the playoffs and getting ready for the playoffs?
Well, I think on the immediate thing for that region is that it makes those games so much more interesting because, you know, the thought behind it is, okay, we're going to play those four opponents one time, and that's going to be a non-region game unless our next game against that opponent gets canceled. So let's say that, you know, Sauk City and Conway, for instance, they're probably the, you know, Sauk City is probably the third best team in that region right now, but they're fighting for that third playoff spot behind Sumter and Carolina Forest. So let's say that they go out and, you know, they're down three players or something because of injury and they lose to Conway in that first game. Well, now they know, like, okay, if something happens and we can't play Conway again, our chances of a playoff berth just got real, real tough, you know? So it puts an impetus on all of these teams to take those first games just as seriously. And I'm not saying that players don't take Friday night games seriously. I'm saying that when they know that a playoff spot is possibly on the line, you can see a different attitude. You know, last year was different because the games were all moved up. But in 2019, 2018, 2017, and every other year I've ever covered high school football, when you get to region play, the attitudes are different. The motivation is higher, you know. So you better believe that the coaches in that region are going to have their kids going into those, you know, quote-unquote non-region games ready to go, and they're going to be selling them on how important that game is. And, you know, look, we've had non-region games around the state for a long time that have not meant anything. You know, they're playing for the love of the game, but if they lose by 60, most of the time it doesn't affect anything. You know, those games now matter, you know, and maybe they matter with an asterisk next to them, but they matter, you know. So, I like it from that aspect of it. You know, I like the fact that we could be covering a region game. We just don't know it yet, if that makes sense. So, you know, I think that's, you know, a pretty big part of it.
Who do you see coming out of Region 6 this year?
As the region champion, I mean, I think it's Sumter's to lose. They've got some really good pieces. Their defensive line took a hit when Jackson went down, but they've got some really good pieces on that team. I think they're probably right now going into the season, I think they're the most prepared. At the same time, I'm going to tell you, I think Carolina Forest defensive line was better than I was expecting. You know, what I saw out of them last week, what I saw from them in a scrimmage the week before, you know, I think that is a real big stabilizing force. Mark Morris has more players than 99% of the teams in this state. And that means that he can pick and choose and he can decide, okay, who's putting the most work in the weight room, because everything that they do, no matter how much we talk about Mason Garcia or Diver Simmons or anybody else that has come through that program and put up crazy numbers, it all starts on the lines. You know, and I think that if they're able to kind of if they're able to keep that going, then I think that they're you know, Sumter's 1 and Carolina Forest is 1A.
With some cancellations in the area, not much in terms of games tonight. Where are you headed tonight? You there?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are.
Cancellations tonight and whatnot. Not too many games here on the Grand Strand tonight. Where are you headed tonight?
I'm actually not covering a game tonight. I'm going to cover Lourdes at St. James tomorrow. We have Charles up at West Brunswick covering Carolina Forest, and we'll have Ian Brooking at Aynor covering the Blue Jackets against Lakeview. And then next week, plan is for me to go to Dillon on Friday night, cover Myrtle Beach, and then, you know, we'll see. You know, we've got kind of tentative plans, but, you know, just like the football teams, we're gonna have to adjust on the fly too. You know, we are still planning on covering every single game involving an Horry County team. And, you know, obviously that's a big goal, but over the course of the last 2 years, we've covered all but two. So, you know, that's something we take seriously. So we've got everybody, you know, we've got everybody rolling and ready to go. And, you know, as long as, you know, the game's being played, we're intending on somebody to be there.
So Charles will be up at West Brunswick tonight?
Yes, sir.
Sounds good. I'll have some game notes for him. So when he gets there, let him know to come up to the press box.
Yeah, much appreciated. I know he always likes the help.
Yep. Great talking to you as always. Look forward to seeing you at some games this season, and it's good to have some football back, even with all the craziness. Still good.
Well,
to have
the craziness is here. We might as well get the football, you know, out of it too. You know, this is why everybody's been, you know, busting their butts trying to stay, you know, healthy all summer. So, you know, these kids are here. Let's let them enjoy it, and let's, you know, enjoy it ourselves.
Exactly. Great talking to you, and have fun with your last Friday night off.
Yeah, until December 17th. So,
we'll talk to you later, Ian.
Thanks, Frank.
That was Ian Guerin. Always fun talking to him, and yeah, he deserves a night off, especially after the craziness that he had to deal with this past week. And yeah, so it's that's good to know. The Lightning, it's within, I think you said 6 miles or 10 miles. And so it's, you know, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see what happens this week when it comes to that. But yeah, let me look to see if there are any other notes that I've missed this for local stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed all the coverage of all the high schools. Other notes to talk about. A couple of other talk about actually when we come back off of the break. So be sure to keep it locked right here on Sports Unlimited on Southern Sports Central. And as always, if you want to call on in, if you want to talk about anything, whether it's locally or nationally, be sure to call on in. 323-784-9681 is that number to call. That number again, 323-784-9681. We'll have the phone lines wide open for the last half hour, and we'll have a few other stories to talk about when I return right here on Sports Unlimited on Sports Central.
Nate!
Welcome back to Sports Unlimited right here on Southern Sports Central. And with that music, you know what time it is. A little bit of hockey talk. I know that's not exactly something that happens around here, although Carolina Hurricanes are pretty good. So, but for those of you who do follow hockey, if you've seen this, it's a very interesting story, and I don't exactly understand why it's happening. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this impacts one team in particular and potentially a couple of cities next year. The city of Glendale have informed the Arizona Coyotes that this will be the team's last season at the Gila River Arena. The parties have been working under a year-to-year contract for the last few years. And now the city of Glendale are saying we want to open up that arena to do more concerts and more events and stuff. They don't want to have the restraint of having, you know, 40 some odd days, if not a few more, out of the potential schedule for Coyote games. Which, first off, before I go into the implications of it, this is ridiculous. Yes, in a smaller town or whatnot, or like a small city like a Florence or whatnot, you know, having an arena like that just simply to bring in things like, you know, concerts and, you know, stuff like that. But here's the thing too about that. Here's the thing about this whole concept that's just idiotic on its face for the city of Glendale. This isn't even go back 10 years ago, but certainly 20 years ago, or certainly 30 years ago. This isn't a landscape where, oh, you've got the Globetrotters that can come in. You've got Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus that can come in. Obviously, you've got concerts. You've got, you know, both WWE and WCW to come in. You know, like, you just thinking about it purely on its face, and now maybe I'm, you know, maybe I'm naive to some things, but, you know, the Ringling Brothers doesn't exist anymore. You don't have that you can bring in to fill space, and that will draw, that at least back in the day, it would draw a pretty good crowd. You know, you could have them in for a couple of nights, and you'd get a good crowd each night. And, you know, that could be a big moneymaker. You know, that doesn't exist anymore. Globetrotters, while, yes, they travel, especially in a city like Glendale or, the Phoenix area, you know, unless you're a really big Globetrotters fan, why would you bother to go see a, you know, fake basketball game when you can go see a real one, whether it's the Suns or Arizona Wildcats or the Sun Devils? You know, they've got plenty of good basketball out in Arizona. So, you know, there's no real reason for the Globetrotters, you know, in that area. Yeah, you're going to get some families coming out, getting, you know, cheaper prices and whatnot, and entertainment and all that. Yeah, sure. But you're not going to get the types of crowds that you would get for a Coyotes game. And on top of that, you know, so, and plus, I don't think the Globetrotters, I haven't paid attention to them in a long time, but, you know, I don't know how much they travel anymore. I mean, they do travel, obviously, but not, you know, nearly to the level that they used to. But then, outside of that, you know, yeah, you've got concerts and stuff, but also, think about it. Phoenix is right up the road, and they have their own arena where the Suns play. So, I don't get it. I don't get this whatsoever. Phoenix is going to, or Glendale is going to lose a big moneymaker. They're going to lose, you know, a big part of, you know, what that city is known for. Arizona as a whole are going to lose the quadfecta. And, you know, the Coyote fans were supporting them, maybe not as well as they should have, but they were doing pretty well. It wasn't like they weren't drawing at all. So I don't get this at all. But you know what? Their loss could be someone else's gain. There's no indication right now on what the Coyotes will do after the league. If they wanted to, they could move into where the Suns played and stay in the Phoenix area. We'll see if they decide to do that. You know, maybe change their name back to the Phoenix Coyotes. But if the Coyotes were to move, like I said, that would make Phoenix lose the quadfecta. Here are my two options. And granted, I don't know how well either one of these would work. But for those of you who have listened to me before, you know when it comes to relocation and expansion, I'm all for creating quadfectas in a city. And the only two cities that currently are only missing out on an NHL team are Houston and Atlanta. And now I understand, especially for Atlanta, they've tried it a couple of times in Atlanta, first with the Flames, now and then with the Thrashers, and it's failed both times. I understand this. I understand Atlanta is not exactly a hockey city. So maybe Atlanta may not be the best option. But Houston, especially with how Houston is growing, see Houston being a potential option. I mean, look at Dallas. Look at the Stars. The Stars have done well in Dallas. Look at the Lightning. They've done well in Tampa. The Panthers in Miami, not quite as much, but still, they've done decently. Now, granted, Tampa is a much more transplant-based city. A lot more transplants moving down there to retire. So you get that. I understand that part. But still, it's worked. Charlotte, or not Charlotte technically, but Raleigh. Raleigh has worked. And, you know, not many transplants. I mean, yes, it's a pretty big city, you know, and you have some transplants. Even outside of that, it's not like it's filled with transplants. Raleigh has worked. The Hurricanes have been successful and popular in Raleigh. Now, granted, in Raleigh itself, that's the only thing in town outside of NC State. So it's a little different in that sense. But I honestly think if the Coyotes were to move to Houston, I could see it working. I could see it working. Now, obviously, they need to change their name because, you know, the whole reason why they're named Coyotes is because Arizona is known for them. So, interesting concept, actually, of what the Coyotes could be renamed to if they decide to move to. But if you didn't want to go one of those two routes and try to create the quadfecta, the other two places I would love to see them move back to, the NHL as a whole, I would love for them to move back to and recreate one of these two teams, which it's not like we haven't seen it before. We saw it a couple of years ago with the Winnipeg Jets being reintroduced. I would love to see them. Now, obviously, both of these cities would need to massively upgrade their arenas, but at least for the time being, it could work if you move them right away. Either Hartford and bring back the Whalers, or Quebec and bring back the Nordiques. Those would be my top two options if you didn't want to move them to either Houston or Atlanta. Houston or Atlanta, probably Houston the top choice for me, just to see how a team would do in Houston and to give Houston the quadfecta. But outside of that, I would say if you didn't want to try a southern city again, because I think the NHL is probably getting annoyed at trying to expand the league down south and it failing miserably. But if you didn't want to try that, now granted, like I said, Hurricanes have done well for themselves, so it's not all doom and gloom down here. Didn't want to try have another southern experiment, I would say either Hartford or Quebec. Those would be my two options. But it's going to be interesting to see if anything comes of this, and you know. Again, I don't get why this has happened. I don't get why they're, you know, the city of Glendale is suddenly kicking them out for, you know, the hopes of being able to fill that place with other things. I don't get it. I don't get it. With 15 minutes left to go on the show, once again, if you want to call in, if you want to get any last thoughts in, last comments, 323-784-9681 is that number to call. That number again, 323-784-9681. But with that being said, one last note for you guys before I start wrapping things up. On the college front, on the South Carolina front, and I will do a lot more. I'll do basically a full college preview next week, which will be week one. We'll talk about week zero for high school, prepare you for week one next week, and college football preview for next week, since next week is week one for college. It's crazy, like I said with high school, it's crazy that, you know, we're already back into football season. But the big news coming out of South Carolina, out of the Gamecocks this week, was that local guy here, Luke Doty, out of Myrtle Beach, has a foot sprain right now. Luckily it's only a sprain. You know, Shane Beamer sounded optimistic when he talked about it. It might keep him out of week one, but both he and Shane Beamer are sounding optimistic. Day to day, saying he's optimistic that he'll be ready for week one. Luckily, it's nothing too serious. It's not going to knock him out for the whole season or anything like that. But tough break for him still that, you know, he has to miss out on some time and all of that. But luckily, it seems like he should be ready for week one I think they do play next week, if I remember correctly. Or actually, no, I don't think they play until, technically next week is week zero, technically, and then week one is the next week. So, I don't think they play until the fourth, or is it the fourth or fifth? It's either fourth or fifth. It would be the fourth. But, again, still a tough break for him. But luckily it doesn't seem like it's anything that serious. Like I mentioned, one other thing I didn't go through this morning before we sign out. Some recruiting notes for this week. Brandon Sissy from Lakewood was offered by Akron. Jack Greenway from North Augusta was offered by Wofford. And then a few baseball commits following the Diamond Prospects Palmetto games, which were a lot of fun this past weekend. Lots of good action there. The baseball guys getting their work in. Jarian Pinckney from Andrews committed to North Carolina A&T. T.A. Aiken from Greenwood committed to Old Dominion. Matthew Lively from Chapin committed to Citadel. And Bo Hollins from River Bluff committed to South Carolina. So, congratulations to all those guys. Good to see them getting those D1 commits and D1 offers. Before you know it, with how these years have been going, before you know it, we'll be back to the baseball season again. But hey, it's football season. That's what we're focused on right now. Football season. Hope you guys enjoy all of the games throughout the next couple of days, because I know there are some games tomorrow. I know there are some games on Monday. And I'm certainly looking forward to it. If you want to listen to the Carolina Forest game tonight, weather permitting, obviously, follow CFHS Panthers FBN on Twitter. Or if you just want to, get the game, go to shnsports.com/Carolina. That's where you can find the broadcast for all of the Carolina Forest games. And that's where the broadcast for tonight's game will be. Should be a fun season. For those of you like I say every week, especially now after what happened this week, for those of you who are not vaccinated, please, 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 if not for yourself, for the kids, for the sport that we love, for high school football, please, 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 go get vaccinated. This season has already had some issues, but as long as everyone does their part and everyone does what they need to do, we should be able to get through the season and have some good moments, have some good times, hopefully be able to have a good season. Like I mentioned earlier, we've got some good matchups tonight. I think the one that I'm looking forward to the most out of all the games tonight, obviously outside of Carolina Forest versus West Brunswick, is, you know, and David Chilton and I were talking about it earlier. I think, and he's hyped it up even more than I initially thought. Goose Creek against Oceanside Collegiate. It's going to try to answer that age-old question. Can a 2A or 3A school, in this case a 3A school, you know, 1A, 2A, 3A, you know, one of the lower-level schools, beat a 5A school? And not just a 5A, but a very good 5A program in Goose Creek. So it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be a game that, you know, is going to bear watching. There are some other good games this week, too. You know, Gaffney at Spartanburg, that's going to be a very good game in the upstate. Them trying to start the season off strong against each other. Wood and Hillcrest, two of the top teams in their respective classifications. You know, Hillcrest receiving votes in 5A, Greenville at number 3 and getting number one vote in 4A. So again, that's another one of those, you know, where it's like, is the 4A school that's the top of its class better than the 5A that's, you know, kind of not really middle of the pack, I'll say, but, you know, a little lower down in the pecking order than the 4A school. You know, you got Westwood and Ridgeview tonight in Ridgeview's new digs. That should be a fun one. So, you know, a lot of fun football tonight. A lot of fun games coming up throughout these next couple of weeks. And like I said, unfortunately, it's not very good. You don't want it to happen, but unfortunately this is going to be another year. And Ian made a good point earlier about how the reasoning for why we're getting even more, and he was right, I was right in my thought that there have been more cancellations this year in week one than there were last year in week one. This year, is you're going to have to keep track of things very closely and make sure you know what exactly is going on throughout the state and for your local team, because things are going to be very fluid. I don't even know, after tonight, I don't know where the next game is going to be, if there's going to be a game next week, or if it's going to be a bye week, you know. So that's the craziness of this whole situation, and this whole year is going to be another crazy one. But I will try to give you, you know, as much clarity as I can, you know, because that's not going to be guaranteed either. I mean, you know, things are going to be so fluid this year. And, you know, like I said, and like Ian said, this may not necessarily be a bad thing, per se. You know, yes, it's not ideal by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, is it something that we can overcome, and through cooperation and through, you know, together and, you know, just figuring out how to do it, it can easily be done. It can easily be done. It's a matter of if coaches want to do it. You know, it's all going to be a matter of whether or not coaches are willing to, you know, maybe pick some games that under normal circumstances they wouldn't have wanted to pick or that they wouldn't necessarily want to play. It's going to be a situation where you're going to have to just keep an eye on things day by day, week by week, seeing who's playing. Keep you informed as best as I can. Quick breaking news real quick. As I mentioned, you know, I was mentioning hockey before. Henrik Lundqvist announced his retirement after a 15-year career. Big news there on the hockey front. But like I said, I'll be sure to keep all of you guys informed on everything going on. That'll just about wrap it up for me this morning. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. I'm Brandon Bisping, saying so long. Hope you guys enjoy week zero of South Carolina high school football. And we pretty keep you locked right here on Sports Unlimited with Southern Sports Network every week. All of the high school football team. I'm Brandon Bisping, saying so long. Talk to you guys. So long, everyone.